Renna sat in a corner as Arlen taught the council combat warding in Hog's back room. Daisy and Katrin were in and out serving fresh pots of coffee. They watched Renna suspiciously, as if expecting her to suddenly leap up and attack them with Harl's knife, which lay on the table beside her. She'd painted wards on the blade in a neat hand, and now worked with one of Arlen's fine etching tools, slowly imprinting them onto the metal. Arlen came by once, trying to see her work, but she turned away from him. She was done asking for help. Dawn's light was creeping through the cracks in the shutters by the time the speakers finished, each standing up with a roll of vellum in their hands. Arlen spoke with Hog a few moments longer, then came over to her.
You all right?
Just tired.
Well, might be you can catch a couple hours sleep back at the farm while Hog readies the supplies we need to head back. The old crook had the stones to charge for him, even after I handed him the means to make a fortune.
Dunno why he expected different.
Leaving town, then?
Celia spoke as they went for the door.
You turn the brook on its head, and then ride off before you see what comes of it?
Town was already on its head when I arrived. Reckon I set it aright.
Maybe you did it then. What news from the Free Cities? Are they all warding weapons and killing Corlins?
Free Cities ain't your concern right now. When the brook is free of demons, you can look to the wider world.
Georgie Watch thumped his new spear on the floor.
Tend your own field before you look to your neighbors.
Arlen turned to Rusko Hog.
I want copies made and sent to the speakers of Sunny Pasture.
Well, that won't be cheap. The vellum alone will cost nearly 20 credits, plus having them penned.
Arlen cut him off, holding up a heavy gold coin. Hog's eyes bulged at the size and thickness of it.
If they don't get their wards, I'll hear of it, and I'll make vellum out of your hide.
Renna saw Hog's ruddy complexion pale, and even though he was larger by far, he shrank back from Arlen's stare and swallowed hard.
2 weeks. Honest word.
Learn to bully a bit yourself.
The warded man didn't look at her, and his hood was still up. For a moment, she thought he might not have heard.
Got whole lessons on it during my messenger training.
Hog opened the doors to the store, and there was a huge crowd waiting on the steps.
Back! Clear path for the speakers! Ain't gonna take a single order until you do!
Radek Lowry was waiting at the front of the crowd as Renna descended the steps of Hog's porch.
This ain't over, Renna Tanner. Can't hide up at Jeff's farm forever.
Ain't hiding from no one no more. I'm leaving this correspond town and ain't never coming back.
Radek opened his mouth to reply, but Arlen raised a warded finger at him and he fell silent, glaring at them as Arlen laced his hands into a step to help her onto Twilight Dancer's back. He pulled a small book from his saddlebag, turning and scanning the crowd. Spotting Colleen Trigg, he strode over to her.
Everything I know about treating demon wounds is in there. You're smart, you'll learn it and pass it on.
Colleen's eyes were wide, but she nodded. Arlen leapt into the saddle. Arlen left Jeff's farm around noon to fetch the promised supplies from Hog.
Pack your things. We'll leave as soon as I get back.
Renna nodded and watched him go. She had nothing to pack, not even back at Harl's farm. Only Celia's dress on her back, her father's knife at her waist, and the brookstone necklace Kobe had given her, still looped twice around her neck. She wished she had something to offer Arlen in exchange for taking her, but she had nothing but herself. Kobe had thought it enough, but she doubted Arlen would be so easily paid. Elaine came out onto the porch to stand next to her as she sat etching her father's blade.
Brought something to eat on your trip. Hog cooks so food'll keep more than he does for taste. His bacon's more smoke than meat.
Thanks.
You don't have to go, Ren.
Yes, I do.
That messenger's a hard man, Renna. We don't know nothing about him other than he kills demons. Could be worse than Dow, Longsight. You're safer here with us. After last night, folks will hold their peace with you.
Hold their peace? Reckon that makes it Sunny. They tried to stake me.
So you're gonna just run off with some stranger crazy enough to scar himself with wards?
If that ain't the night calling it dark. You didn't love Jeff Bales when you ran away with him, Laney. Didn't know anything other than he was the sort would take a new wife when the old one wasn't even cold.
Elaine slapped Renna, but she didn't flinch, her eyes hard, and it was Elaine who recoiled.
Difference between us, Laney, is I ain't running away. I'm running too.
Running too?
Tippett's Brook ain't a place I want to live, where folk let a man like Dad do as he will and put me out into the night. I don't know what the Free Cities are like, but they gotta be better than here. I killed Dad, Laney. I did. Killed that son of the core good. He needed killing, not just for what he'd done, but what he would have done I hadn't. Dad never paid for anything an ounce of cruelty could take.
Rena!
You had any stones, you'd have done it yourself long since when Benny and I were still youngins.
Elaine's eyes widened, but she said nothing, and Rena couldn't tell if it was guilt or shock. Rena turned away, looking out at the yard.
I don't blame you. I'd had stones, I'd have done it myself the night he stuck me. But I didn't, because I was scared.
She turned back to meet Elaine's eyes.
But I ain't scared no more, Laney. Not of Radic Lowry or Garrick Fisher, and not of this messenger. I expect he's a good man. But he turns out like that, I'll do the world a favor and kill him too. Sure as the sun rises.
The warded man came riding fast into the yard a couple of hours later. Rena was waiting on the porch and came out to him as Twilight Dancer pranced and kicked up dust in the yard.
Light's wasting.
You're not even gonna say goodbye?
Light's about to get real interesting in the brook. Best no one have cause to think I got anything more to do with Jeff and Laney Bales than stealing you.
Your dad deserves better than you've given him.
Ain't gonna tell him who I am.
At least tell him his son ain't dead. Or you got no call judging which folk are good enough for your wards and which ain't.
The warded man scowled, but he dismounted. Rena was right, and he knew it, much as he hated to admit it.
We're off!
Everyone came running from all over the yard. The warded man looked at his father and nodded away from the press. Jeff followed.
Rode caravan with an Arlen Bales in the Messenger's Guild. Might have been your son. Bales' name is common everywhere, but Arlen not so much.
Honest word?
It was years ago, but I recall he worked for Cobb's Warding Company, Fort Milne. Might be you can still get word of him there.
Jeff reached out, grabbed one of the warded man's hands in both of his own.
Sunshine on you, messenger.
The warded man nodded and pulled away, going over to Rena.
Light's wasting.
She nodded this time and let him lift her into Twilight Dancer's saddle. He climbed in ahead of her, and she held his waist as he trotted to the road and turned north.
Ain't the road to the Free City south?
No shortcut. Faster, and we avoid the town altogether.
Twilight Dancer opened his stride, and they flew up the road. The wind whipped through Rena's hair. True to his word, Arlen remembered every path and pasture of the local farms in the north of Tibbetts Brook. Before Rena knew it, they were on the main road out of town, past even Mac Pasture's farm. They rode hard for the rest of the day and were well on the way to the Free Cities when he finally pulled up with barely a quarter hour before sunset.
Ain't we cutting it close?
Got time enough to set the circles. I was alone, I might not stop at all.
Then don't. Promised I wasn't gonna slow you.
He ignored her, dismounting and pulling two portable circles from the saddlebags. He threw one over Twilight Dancer and the other in a small clearing, quickly aligning the wards. Rena swallowed, but she did not protest. Stiffening, she clutched her knife and looked around, waiting for the demon mist to rise. Arlen glanced up and noticed her discomfort. He straightened from his work, going over and rummaging through his saddlebags.
Ah, there it is.
Arlen opened a cloak and threw it over Rena's shoulders. He tied it in place and put up the hood. The cloth against her cheek was impossibly soft, like a kitten's fur. Used to rough homespun, the fabric was finer than she imagined possible. She looked down. There were wards sewn into the fabric with stitches impossibly small. Hundreds of them.
That's a cloak of unside. So long as you keep wrapped in it, no demon will even know you're there.
Honest word?
Swear by the sun.
Arlen bent back to the circles and quickly had them ready, while she laid a fire pit and took out Elaine's basket. They sat together at times, sharing cold meat pies and ham, fresh vegetables, bread and cheese. Corlings threw themselves at the wards occasionally, but Rena trusted in Arlen's warding and paid them no mind.
You sit saddle awkward in that big dress.
Huh?
I can't give Dancer his full head with you not seated right.
He goes even faster?
Much.
She leaned over to him, putting her arms around his shoulders.
If you're looking to get me out of my dress, Arlen Bales, just say so.
She smiled, but Arlen recoiled, putting his hands on her waist and lifting her off him like she might lift Mrs. Scratch from her lap. He was on his feet immediately.
I didn't bring you for that, Ren.
You ain't taking advantage.
It ain't about that.
Arlen took a sewing kit out of his saddlebag. He threw it to her, turning away.
Divide your skirts and do it quick. We have business yet tonight.
Business?
You're killing a demon by dawn. or I'm dropping you in the next town.
Done.
Renna had removed her petticoat and shortened the skirt, slitting it high on each side. Arla looked up from where he sat, warding an arrow at the edge of the circle, and his eyes danced across her bared thighs.
Like what you see? Come into the firelight, you want a better look.
Arla looked at his hand for a moment, slowly rubbing his warded fingers together, his eyes in distant thought. Finally, he shook his head and got to his feet, coming over to her.
You trust me, Ren?
She nodded, and he took out a brush and some thick, viscous ink.
This is Blackstem. It'll stain your skin for a few days, perhaps a week.
Carefully, almost lovingly, he brushed her long hair from her face and painted wards around her eyes. When his warding was done, he looked at her.
What do you see beyond the firelight?
Nothing.
Arlen nodded and laid his hands on her eyes. They were rough hands, scarred and calloused, but gentle as well. There was a soothing tingle in her skin where he touched. He took his hands away, and the sensation faded, but the wards around her eyes felt warm now.
What do you see now?
Wow!
Renna looked around, amazed. Trees and plants now glowed of their own accord, and there was a glowing mist seeping about her feet like a low and lazy fog.
Everything. More than I see in the sun. It's all glowing.
You're seeing magic. It seeps up from the core and gives all living things a spark of it that makes them glow.
Their soul?
I ain't a tender. Corlings are infused with it and will flare brightly to your eyes now.
Renna turned toward a rustle in the brush, and a wood demon there, invisible a moment before, now shone in the magic-lit world. She looked at her own hand, glowing only faintly. Twilight Dancer was brighter. Wards on his hooves and harness glowed like stars in the sky. But it was Arlen who shone brightest, the wards on his skin positively brimming over with power. It looked as if they were written in light, permanently activated.
Too many wards. Soaked up too much demon magic to ever be just a man again.
Why would you ever want to give up such power?
Arlen paused, seeming confused. He opened his mouth and closed it.
I don't know I would, but it ain't a choice you can take back, and I wasn't in my right head when I made it. You ain't in your right head either.
Who are you, Arlen Bales, to tell me when my head is right?
He ignored her in that infuriating way he had, taking up a spear and handing it to her. She looked at it doubtfully and made no effort to take it.
Speaker's all done it.
I know that. But if I'm gonna fight, it'll be with my own knife.
It's a fine blade, sharp enough to shave.
Your dad cared for it better than he did his own kin.
Arlen looked at her but said nothing. He held the knife this way and that, inspecting the etched wards.
Good warden. Good as any I've seen. Could do with more, but this is enough to start.
He handed it back, pommel first.
All that's left is to test it. Time to leave the circle.
Arlen put a hand on her shoulder.
We're miles from nowhere, Ren. Corlings cluster where there's people to hunt or big game. Won't be but a few out here. You got your cloak, and I'm right here.
To save me?
He nodded, and she felt a flash of anger. She was tired of waiting for others to save her, but she looked at a wood demon stalking the edge of the road.
I ain't ready for this.
No, you're scared, Spitless. I was my first time, but I learned in Crasia to embrace my fear.
How's that?
Open yourself to the feeling, and then step back to a place beyond.
Well, that don't make any sense.
It does. Seen boys half my age charge demons with nothing more than a wardless spear between them. Seeing them ignore pain and keep fighting like everything's sunny till they win or drop dead. Fear and pain can only touch you if you let them.
Honest word?
Arlen lifted a finger, pointing to a small wood demon clinging to a nearby tree. It would otherwise have blended with the trunk perfectly, but now it glowed fiercely to her warded eyes, a stark contrast with the dimmer glow of the tree. Trusting in her cloak, Renna left the circle and walked calmly to the demon. It sniffed the air with a look of vague curiosity, but gave no sign it sensed her proximity. There was a shock up her right arm as if she had just put the whole arm in a roaring fire, a pain that pulsed with ecstasy. Renna straightened. She felt stronger, more alive than she ever had in her life. Across the road, she caught a glimpse of a flame demon's glowing eyes, and this time, she didn't hesitate. Her eyes hard as she charged and dropped to one knee, putting the blade right through its head. The original wood demon she had seen on the road was 6 feet tall and noticed the commotion. She could have hidden behind her cloak, but the thought never occurred to her as Renna launched herself at it. The demon took a swipe at her, but Renna was fast and strong like she had never dreamed, and she dodged the clumsy attack and put her knife in its chest. She looked around, breathing hard, but not in exhaustion. It felt more like lust. She wanted there to be more demons, wanted there to be a horde of them, but there were none.
Told you.
Arlen gathered the circles back up and took Twilight Dancer's reins.
Let's go for a ride in the naked night. Free.
Renna nodded, vaulting easily into the giant stallion's saddle without touching the stirrup. She took the front position, leaving room for Arlen to climb in behind her. He leapt into place as easily as she had. He put his arms about her, and she kicked Twilight Dancer. The stallion leapt forward, and they galloped down the glowing night road. It had been a full turn since the Corling Prince glimpsed its prey in the walled breeding ground. It was forced to spend 2 nights tracking the one, coming at last to soar above an abandoned ruin thick with his scent. Fresh wards protected the structure, strong ones, but easily breached nonetheless. There was no need, however, as the mind demon spotted the human mind moving through the woods far from the walls. With a flap of its gargantuan wings, the mimic banked and soared toward the human. The mind demon reached out with its thoughts, seeking access to the one's thoughts, but it was turned away by powerful warding. As it spread its probe wider, it discovered he was not alone. The human mind traveled with a female whose mind was as open as the sky. It slipped quietly into her thoughts and rested unnoticed, seeing through her eyes. Renna stabbed hard into the wood demon, twisting the blade up into its heart. Next to her, Arlen had wrestled the other one to the ground, holding it prone while the killing wards all over his body did their work. Renna looked up to see a third demon appear in the branches above her. She twisted as it dropped, but caught the hilt of her knife on the ridge armor of the first demon. The Corling fell dead, and the weapon was twisted from her grasp.
Demon shit!
She dropped to her back and coiled her legs as Arlen had taught her. She caught the wood demon's branch-like arms and pulled them aside as she kicked out, using its own momentum against it. The demon landed right in front of Arlen, who crushed its skull.
You let me ward my knuckles, I could do that myself.
Ain't no need to ward your skin. Knife's good enough for now.
Renna went over to the wood demon, pulling her knife free. She held it up for Arlen to see.
Didn't have the knife.
You handled it well enough without.
Only because you weren't still wrestling that other one. Ain't looking to use a needle, only a brush and some blackstem.
Feedback's different when the wards are on your skin, Ren. Strong enough to lose yourself in. I was lost a long time after I started doing it, and I ain't myself even now. I don't want to see that happen to you. You mean too much to me.
I do?
Good to have someone to talk to other than Dancer. I get lonely.
Lonely? Know what that's like. Yet to lose yourself there, too. World's full of things to lose yourself in. Don't mean we should spend our whole lives behind the wards.
I can't tell you what to do, Ren. You want to ignore me and paint your hands? It's on you.
The Corling Prince observed the courting for several more minutes, amused by human mating rituals. It was clear the one barely understood his magic, oblivious to the mind demon's presence or the extent of his own powers. He had the potential to be a unifier, but here, in the wilderness, he was no threat and could be safely observed. The demon let go the female's surface thoughts, probing more deeply into her mind for information on the one, but there was little of value. It planted a question on her lips.
How'd you bring back the lost wards?
Told you. I found them in a ruin.
What ruin? Where?
What does it matter? It ain't some jongler's saga.
I'm sorry. Don't know why I got so interested. Don't matter. Ain't looking to pry.
Huh.
It was well after dark by the time the council meeting ended. As Leisha expected, they had voted unanimously against her going back to Ryzen with Shardir, and had all been appropriately shocked when she reminded them their votes meant exactly nothing. Leisha was without the benefit of her warded cloak for the walk back to her cottage, but Rogier layered a protective field of music around the group as potent as any ward net. His powers seemed to have increased tenfold with his new fiddle, but Wanda and Garrod kept their weapons ready as they escorted Darcy and Vika.
Still say you're out of your skull.
You're welcome to your opinion, Darcy, but it isn't open for debate.
What are we supposed to do if they take you? Ain't like we can mount a rescue. And you're what holds this town together. Especially with the Deliverer gone off to Creator knows where.
Prince Thamus and the Wooden Soldiers will be here soon.
They ain't gonna come for you either.
I don't expect them to. You'll just have to trust me to take care of myself.
I'm more worried about the rest of us. If you marry this man, we lose you forever. And if you don't, we'll likely lose you that way as well. What are we supposed to do?
That's why I brought you here tonight.
Leisha's cottage came into sight, and they were barely inside before she signaled Wanda to lift the trap door to her basement workshop.
Everyone but Vika and Darcy stays up here. This is Gatherer's business.
The others nodded, and Leisha escorted the women down the stairs, lighting her cool chemic lamps on the way.
Creator.
Darcy had not seen the cellar in many years, since Bruna had dismissed her as an apprentice. Leisha had expanded it greatly since then, and it now covered the whole underside of the cottage and most of the yard as well, an enormous space. Warded support pillars ran along the walls of the main chamber and the many offshoot tunnels.
There's enough flamework here to turn the hollow into the face of the sun!
Why do you think I've kept my cottage so far from town? I've been brewing demon fire and rolling thundersticks every night for a year.
Why didn't you tell anyone?
Because no one else need know. I won't have the cutters or the town council determining how this should be used. It's Gatherer's business. And you'll dole it out sparingly while I'm gone, and only when it will preserve lives. And I'll have your words that you'll keep the same silence, or I'll dose your tea so you don't remember being here at all.
I swear.
Darcy hesitated a moment longer, but finally nodded.
Swear by the sun. But even this won't last you don't come back.
Leisha nodded, turning to a table piled high with books.
These are the secrets of fire.
Jardir smiled broadly as Leisha and her escort arrived. It was a smaller group than he had anticipated for such a powerful woman. Just her parents, Roger, Giant Garrod, and the female Sharam Wanda.
That one will set the Dharma in a frenzy.
Aban indicated Wanda.
They will demand she give up her weapons and cover herself. You should ask that she stay behind.
I promised Leisha that she could choose her chaperone, and I will not go back on my word. Our people must begin to accept the ways of the Hollow Tribe. Perhaps showing them a woman who fights Alagai Sharok is a good way to begin.
If she acquits herself well before them.
I've seen the woman fight. With proper training, she could become as formidable as any Sharam.
Tread carefully, Aman. Force change on our people too quickly, and many of them will reject it.
Jardir nodded, knowing well the truth of Aban's words.
I want you to keep close to Leisha on the trip back to Evrim's Bounty. Use the pretext of teaching her our language, as she has requested. It would be unseemly for me to attend her too closely, but her Greenland chaperone should accept you.
Better than the Dar Sharam, I'm sure.
I want to know everything about her. The food she likes to eat, the scents that give her pleasure, everything.
Of course, I will see to it.
While the Dal Sharam broke camp, Aban limped over to the covered wagon Leisha and her parents rode in. The woman drove the horses herself, Aban noted in surprise. No servants to attend her, nor keep her hands from work. His respect for her grew.
May I ride with you, mistress? My master has asked that I instruct you in our language as you requested.
Of course, Aban. Roger can take a horse.
Roger, seated next to her in the driver's seat of the cart, made a face.
If you prefer, son of Jessam, you may ride my camel.
Roger looked at the animal dubiously until he saw the canopied and pillowed seat, spacious and richly appointed. A glitter came to his eyes.
She is a gentle beast who'll follow the other animals without direction.
Well, if it will be a favor to you.
Of course.
Roger grabbed his fiddle and somersaulted off the cart, running over to the camel.
May I ask you a question, Aban?
Of course, mistress.
Have you used that crutch since birth?
I wasn't born this way, no. I was injured during Hanupash.
Hanupash?
As good a place as any to begin your lessons.
Aban climbed into the cart and took a seat next to her.
In your tongue, it means life's path. All Krasian boys are taken from their mothers at a young age and brought to their tribe's Sharaj, a training barrack, to learn if Evrim has meant them to be Sharum, Dama, or Kafit. My leg was inevitable. I was never a warrior, and I knew it, right from the first day. I was born a Kafit, and the rigors of Hanupash proved it.
Nonsense.
Amon thought much as you do.
Did he? I wouldn't guess it from the way he treats you.
I beg that you forgive him for that, mistress. My master was called to Hanupash the same day I was, and he fought against Evram's hand time and again, carrying me through the Khajiit Sharaj on his back. He gave me chance after chance, and I let him down every time I was tested.
Were they fair tests?
Nothing on Allah is fair, mistress. A warrior's life, least of all. Either you are weak or you are strong. Bloodthirsty or pious. Brave or cowardly. Hanupash reveals a boy's inner man. And in my case, at least, it was successful. I am not Sharum in my heart.
That's nothing to be ashamed of.
Oh, indeed not. And I am not. A man knows my value, but it would be unseemly for him to show me kindness in front of the other men.
Kindness is never unseemly.
Life in the desert is harsh, mistress, and it has made my people equally so. I beg you, do not judge us until you know us well.
That's why I'm coming. In the meantime, let me examine you. I might be able to do something for your leg.
An image flashed before Aban's eyes of Amon catching sight as Aban lowered his silken pants for Leisha's examination. His life wouldn't be worth a bag of sand after that.
I am Kafit, mistress. Not worthy of your attentions.
You are a man like any other. And if you're going to spend any time with me, I'll not suffer to hear you say otherwise.
I knew another Greenlander once who thought as you do.
Oh? What was his name?
Arlen, son of Jeff. From the Bales clan of Tibet's Brook.
Aban saw her eyes flare with recognition, even though her face showed no other sign.
Tibbetts Brook is far from here, in the Duchy of Milne. I've never had the pleasure to meet anyone from there. What was he like?
He was known to my people as the Parchin, or Brave Outsider, equally at home in the bazaar and the Sharom's maze. Alas, he left our city years ago, never to return.
Perhaps one day you'll meet him again.
Inavera, if Evram wills it, I would be pleased to see my friend again and know that he is well.
They rode together for the rest of the day, speaking of many things, but the subject of the Parchin never rose again. Leisha's silence on the matter told Aban much. Slowed as they were by the trundling cart, the Dalsharim could not give their chargers their head when the sun set, leaving them vulnerable to demons. Aban gave the order that they stop and make camp. Aban was erecting his tent when Aman summoned him.
How went your first day?
She has a fast mind. I started by teaching her simple phrases, but she was dissecting the sentence structure in minutes. She'd be able to introduce herself to anyone and discuss the weather by the time we reach Evram's bounty, and proficient by winter.
It is Evram's will that she learn our tongue.
Perhaps.
What else did you learn?
She likes apples.
Apples?
A northern tree fruit.
You spoke to the woman all day, and all you learned was that she likes apples?
Red and hard, fresh picked from the tree.
Aban smiled as Aman's face deepened into a scowl. He reached into his pocket, holding up a piece of fruit.
Apples, like this one.
Aman's smile nearly reached his ears. Aban left Aman's tent, feeling a slight twinge of guilt at withholding Leisha's reaction to his mention of the Parchin. He had not lied, but even in his own heart, Aban could not explain the omission. The Parchin was his friend, it was true, but Aban had never let friendship stand in the way of prosperity, and his prosperity was inextricably tied to Aman's success in conquering the North. The surest road to that success would be for Aman to find and kill the Parchin quickly. The son of Jeff was not an enemy any man should take lightly. But Aban had survived as Kafit by keeping secrets and waiting for the proper opportunity to exploit them. And there was no secret in all the world greater than this one. Leisha was stirring a cookpot when Jardir came to her circle. Like the warded man, he walked casually through the unwarded areas of the Croatian's haphazard camp. He wore Leisha's warded cloak about his shoulders, but it was thrown back, offering him no protection from calling eyes.
May I join you at the fire?
Of course, son of Hoshkameen.
Leisha had replied in the Croatian tongue. As Aban had taught her, she broke a piece from a fresh loaf of bread and held it out to him.
Share bread with us.
Jardir smiled widely, bowing low as he accepted the bread. Roger and the others came to the pot for their meals as well, but all drifted away at a meaningful look from Leisha. Only Alona stayed in earshot, which Jardir seemed to think was perfectly proper, even if Leisha resented the spying.
Your food continues to delight my tongue.
It's a simple stew.
I hope your belly is not too full.
Jardir pulled out a large red apple.
I have grown fond of this northern fruit, and would share it with you as you shared your bread.
I would like that.
Jardir produced a small knife, cutting neat round slices for them to enjoy. Leisha savored the sweet crunch of every bite, and it took them some time to finish the fruit. Leisha noticed that, however fond he might be of apples, he left almost all of it to her, nibbling only on the irregular cuts and watching her chew with delight in his eyes.
Thank you. That was wonderful.
It was my pleasure. And now, if you wish, it would be my pleasure to read to you passages from the Avesia, as I have promised.
Leisha smiled and nodded, producing the slender leather-bound book from one of the deep pockets of her dress.
I would like that very much. But if you are to read me your book, you must start from the beginning and swear to read it through, omit nothing.
Jardir tilted his head at her, and for a moment Leisha worried that she might have offended him. But then, slowly, a smile crept across his face.
That will take many nights.
My nights seem to be rather free at the moment.
Surprisingly, it was not Wanda who garnered the most attention when they reached Evrim's Bounty, but Garrett. Jardir watched the eyes of the Sharim take in the cutter's enormous frame and powerful muscles, searching for weaknesses, sizing him up for the kill as they did everyone. It was the Sharim way to be ready to fight anyone, enemy, brother, father, or friend. Every one of his warriors would be eager to test his strength against the giant northern warrior. The Sharim who brought him down would carry great honor. It was only after the warriors had assessed Garrett, the most obvious threat, that their eyes slipped to Wanda, and a few did a double take, realizing she was a woman. They sent no word ahead, but when they rode into the courtyard of Jardir's palace, Inevera and the Damaji Ting were there waiting for them. Inevera lay on a pillowed palanquin, held up by muscular-chinned slaves clad only in beetos and vests. She was dressed as scandalously as ever, and even the Greenlanders gasped and colored at the sight of her as her slaves set the palanquin down and she rose to her feet. Her hips swayed hypnotically as she came to Jardir with her hands outstretched.
Who is that?
My first wife, Damaja Inevra. The others are my lesser wives.
Leisha looked at him sharply, and as Abin had warned, her face became a storm cloud.
You're already married?
Of course. I am Shah Damaka.
Leisha opened her mouth to retort, but Inevra reached them, and she swallowed whatever she had been about to say.
Husband.
Inevra embraced him and kissed him deeply.
How I've missed your warmth in our bed.
Allow me to present my honored guest, Mistress Leisha, daughter of Ernie, first herb-gatherer of the Hollow Tribe.
Inevra's eyes narrowed at the title, and she glared at Jardir, then Leisha. For her part, Leisha acquitted herself well, not backing down an inch, and she met Inevra's gaze with a calm serenity and dipped into the skirt-spreading bow the women of the Greenlands favored.
An honor to meet you, Damaja.
Inevra's smile and return bow were equally unreadable, and Jardir knew then that Abin was right. Inevra would not accept this woman as a Jiwa Sen, and would certainly not take it well when Jardir married her anyway and gave her dominion over the women of the North.
I would speak with you in private, husband.
Jardir nodded. Now that the moment to face her had come, he had no desire to delay. He thanked Evrim that the sun was still high and she could not use her Hora magic in its light. Jardir spoke in his native tongue.
Abin, see to it that the Palace of Mirrors is made ready for Mistress Leisha and her entourage during this day.
I believe Damaji Ikak is using the Palace of Mirrors at the moment.
Then he will need to make new arrangements.
I understand.
Jardir bowed to Leisha.
Please, excuse me. I must consult with my wife. Abin will see to your accommodations. When you are settled, I will come to call on you.
Leisha nodded, a cool gesture that warned of fire beneath. Jardir felt his pulse quicken at the sight, and it gave him strength as he and Inevra strode into his palace.
What is the purpose of bringing that woman here?
Inevra spoke when they were alone in her pillow chamber beside the throne room.
The bones have not told you?
Of course they have, but I hold out hope that this once they are wrong and you are not such a fool.
Marriages cemented my power in Krasia. Is it so foolish to think that they would serve the same in the Northland?
These are keen, husband. Fine for the Dal Sharum to breed, but there is not a woman among them worthy to carry your seed.
I disagree. This Leisha is as worthy as any woman I have ever met.
Well, it does not matter. The bones have spoken against her, and I will not approve the match.
You are correct. It matters not. I will still marry her.
You cannot. I am Jiwaka, and I decide who else you may marry.
You are my Krasian Jiwaka. Leisha shall be my Greenland Jiwaka, and have dominion over all my wives in the north.
Nevera's eyes bulge, and he thought for a moment they would pop right out of her face. She came at him, long painted nails leading the way. Jardir blocked and dodged with minimal contact as Nevera pressed her attack. Her long legs, clad only in thin diaphanous silk, kicked high and fast as her fingers stabbed at him, seeking the weak points where a man's muscles and nerves joined. Eventually, he caught her wrist and flipped her onto the pile of pillows.
Attack me again, and Damating or no, I will kill you.
The heathen harlot has bewitched your mind.
Perhaps. Or perhaps she has begun to set it free.
Damaji Akak sneered at them as he left the Palace of Mirrors with his wives and children.
If eyes could core you, his would.
You'd think he hadn't stolen that manse from some Rhizonian royal.
Who knows with these people? He might have taken it as an honor if we had done him the courtesy of killing him and his family first.
That isn't funny, Roger.
I don't know that I was joking.
Aban came out of the manse soon after, bowing deeply.
Your palace awaits, mistress. My wives will be preparing the lower floors for your entourage, but your private chambers, the entire top floor, are ready to receive you.
Leisha looked up at the giant manse. There were dozens of windows on the top floor alone. That whole floor was for her personal use? It was easily 10 times the size of the entire cottage she shared with Wanda.
She gets the whole floor?
Of course. Your chambers shall be richly appointed as well, son of Jessam. But tradition dictates a virgin bride be kept alone on the top floor with her chaperones below to ensure that she don her wedding veil with her honor intact.
I have not agreed to Aman's proposal.
That is so, but neither have you refused. And so you remain my master's intended until you make your decision. The rules of tradition are unbending here, I am afraid. And I strongly advise you, mistress, that unless your answer is yes, you make no final decision while in Evrim's bounty.
They entered the manse, seeing black-clad women everywhere as they polished and straightened. The main entry hall was lined on either side with mirrors reflecting the walls into infinity. The carpet running along the center of the polished stone floor was rich and thick, with bright dyes in the weave, and the banister of the wide stairwell leading up was painted in gold and ivory. Portraits, presumably of the previous owners, lined the walls, watching them ruefully as they ascended the steps. Leisha wondered what had become of them when the Krasians came.
If you would be so kind as to wait up here with your entourage, mistress, I will return shortly to escort them each to their own chambers.
Leisha nodded, and Aban bowed and left them in a massive sitting room whose windows overlooked all of Rhizon proper.
Step outside and guard the door, Garrod.
When the portal was closed, Leisha whirled on her mother.
You told them I was a virgin?
They assumed it. I just let them keep the assumption.
And if I do marry him and he learns I'm not?
Oh, you wouldn't be the first bride to go to her marriage bed a woman. Ain't no man gonna turn away a woman he covets over that.
It doesn't matter. I'm not going to be just another bride in a harem. The nerve of him bringing me here without telling me.
Oh, for night's sake! You've got no excuse for not knowing. Every Krasian tale ever told starts with a lord with dozens of bored wives locked in a harem. What difference does it make anyway? You already said you had no intention of marrying him.
No one asked you.
You already knew he was married, didn't you? You knew, and you still tried to trade me off like a piece of livestock.
Oh, I knew, yes, and I also know that he could burn the hollow to ashes or make my daughter a queen. Was my choice so bad?
Who I marry isn't your choice to make.
Well, someone has to make it. You sure as not weren't going to.
What have you promised them, Mother? And what did they offer in return?
Promised? It's a marriage. All the groom wants is a bed toy and a baby maker. I promised you were fertile and would provide sons. That was all.
You're disgusting. Just how could you know that, anyway?
I might have mentioned your six older brothers, all tragically killed fighting demons.
Oh, Mother!
Do you think six was too many? Well, I was worried I overplayed, but Aubyn accepted it right away and even seemed disappointed. I think I could have gone even higher.
Even one is too many! Lying about dead children? Have you no respect?
Respect for what? The poor souls of children who don't exist?
It was a mistake coming here.
It's a little late to see that. Even if they let us go, it would be the same as spitting in their faces if we left now.
The pain behind Leisha's eyes flared sharply, bringing on a wave of nausea.
Wanda, fetch my herb pouch.
Her mother would be easier to deal with after she had taken a tincture for blood flow to ease the headache. Shardir arrived soon after the lower rooms were ready and her friends escorted down to them. Leisha wondered if he had purposely waited until she was alone before visiting. He stood in the doorway and bowed, but did not enter.
I do not wish to give dishonor. Would you prefer to have your mother present to chaperone?
I'd as soon be chaperoned by a Coraline. I think I can handle you if you put a hand where it doesn't belong.
Of course. I have no doubt. I must apologize for the meanness of your accommodations. I wish I had a palace worthy of your power and beauty, but alas, this poor hovel is the best Evrim's bounty has to offer at the moment.
Why didn't you tell me you were already married?
Your pardon, mistress. I assumed you knew. Your mother suggested I not speak of it because your jealousy rivals your beauty, and thus must be terrible indeed.
I was flattered by your proposal. Creator, I even considered it. But I do not fancy being a part of a crowd, Amon. Such things are not done in the North. Marriage is a union of two, not two dozen.
I cannot change what is, but I beg you still not to rush to decision. I would make you my first wife in the Northland, with power of refusal to all who come after. If you wish me to take no other Greenland brides, it shall be so. Think carefully on this. If you bear me sons, my people will have no choice but to accept the Hollow Tribe.
Leisha frowned, but she knew better than to refuse him flatly. They were in his power and knew it. Again, she found herself regretting her rash decision to come.
Night will fall soon. I have come to invite you and your bodyguards to Alagai Sharak.
Leisha looked at him for a long moment, considering.
Our war with the Alagai is the common ground our people stand on. It will help my warriors to accept you if they see we are siblings in the night.
All right. Though my parents will stay behind.
Of course. I swear by Evrim's beard that they will be safe here.
Is there a reason to worry to the contrary?
Of course not. I was simply stating the obvious. Forgive me.
Leisha was impressed with the tight units the Krasian warriors formed for inspection as Shardir led Leisha and the others to Alagai Sharak. Aubyn limped at her side, and Leisha was grateful as ever for his presence. Her understanding of the Krasian language was progressing rapidly, but there were hundreds of cultural rules she and the others did not understand. Much like Roger, Aubyn could speak without moving his lips, and his whispered hints of when to bow and when to nod, when to placate and when to stand fast, had kept them all from conflict so far. But more than that, Leisha found she liked Aubyn. Despite an injury that put him in the lowest echelon of his society, the Cafete had managed to keep his spirits and his humor, and had risen to new power of a sort.
That can't be all of them.
Roger was looking at the assembled Sharam, over 1,000 in number.
No way that many men took the whole duchy. We can field that many fighters in the Hollow.
No, Roger. We can field carpenters and bakers, laundresses and seamstresses who will pick up a weapon at need to defend in the night. These men are professional soldiers.
Ugh, still ain't enough.
You are correct, of course. You see but a tiny fraction of the warriors at my master's command.
Aubyn gestured to the 12 units of men in the courtyard by the great gate.
These are the most elite fighters of each of the 12 tribes of Krasia, chosen as honor guards to their damaji in the city proper. Before you is the most invincible fighting force the world has ever seen. But even they are nothing compared with the million spears the Shardar Makah can muster. The rest of the tribes have dispersed throughout the hundreds of villages in Evrim's bounty.
A million spears. If Shardir could field even a quarter of that, the free cities would be best off to surrender quickly, and she should get used to the idea of being Jardir's bed toy. Arlen had seemed convinced the Krasian army was much smaller than that. Leisha looked at Abin, wondering if he was being honest. Dozens of questions popped into her mind, but she wisely kept them to herself, lest they reveal even more of her inner counsel.
And the people living in those villages? What became of them?
They live there still. You must think us monsters to fear we are slaying the innocent.
There are such rumors in the north, I'm afraid.
Well, they are untrue. The conquered people are taxed, yes, and the boys and the men trained in Alagasharak, but their lives are otherwise unchanged. And in return, they have pride in the night.
Again, Leisha studied Abin's face for a hint of where exaggeration might become lie, but she found nothing. Levying boys and men to war was a horror, but at least she could tell the distraught refugees back in the hollow that their captured husbands, brothers, and sons were likely still alive. At the forefront of the ranks of soldiers stood two men, one in a white turban above warrior black, the other clad in Dama white.
My master's first son, Jayan, and his second, Asum.
Jardir strode out before the men, and the power he radiated was palpable. The warriors looked at him in awe, and even his sons had a fanatical gleam in their eyes. Leisha was surprised to find that after only 2 weeks of instruction, she understood most of what he said.
Shadow of the Desert Spear! Tonight, we are honored to be joined in Alagasharak by Shahram of the Hollow Tribe to the north, our brothers in the night.
Jardir gestured to Leisha's group.
They are to fight?
Father, the Avisa states clearly that women are barred from Sharak.
The Avisa was written by the Deliverer. I am the Deliverer now, and I will say how Sharak is fought.
I will not fight alongside a woman.
Jardir struck like a lion, his hand a blur as he seized his son by the throat. Jayan's feet left the ground, toes barely scraping the dirt, as Jardir flexed his arm to its full length. Leisha started forward, but Abin blocked her with his crutch, applying surprising strength.
Don't be a fool.
Something in the urgency of his voice checked Leisha, and she eased back, watching helplessly as Jardir choked the life from his son. She drew a relieved breath as the boy was cast to the ground.
What kind of animal attacks his own son?
Didn't have no choice. Ain't no one going into the night following a paw who can't even keep his own boys in line.
I don't need advice from the town bully, Garrett.
No, he's right. I didn't understand what they said, but my paw would have smacked my nose off if I took that tone with him. Reckon it'll do him good to eat a little dirt.
Leisha stared at Wanda in surprise.
It seems our ways are not as different as they first appear, mistress.
Alagasharak was a nightly sweep around the perimeter of the city. The Sharam exited the north gate and spread out shoulder to shoulder and shield to shield, six tribes heading east and six west, killing any Alagai in their path until they met at the south gate. To avoid further conflict, Jardir deliberately sent Jayan and Asom east while taking Leisha and the others west. Abin was left behind at the gate. None of the Hollow tribe carried shields, so Jardir put them behind the line, personally escorting Leisha with Hasik and a handful of the spears of the Deliverer. Demons filtered in quickly after the Dalsharim passed to feed on the corpses of Korlings left for the sun, and they did not hesitate to attack the small group. At first, the Krasians had sought to protect them, but as Jardir had hoped, Leisha and the others quickly disabused them of the need. Leisha hurled her fire magic at the Alagai, scattering them like sand in the wind. Garrett and Wanda strode into packs of demons with impunity, the giant cutter hacking them to pieces with his axe and machete, as Wanda's bow hummed like the strings of Roja's fiddle, killing every demon she so much as glanced at from afar. She was well away from the others when her arrows ran out. A flame demon charged at her, and one of the spears of the Deliverer rushed to defend her. He needn't have bothered. Wanda slung the bow from her shoulder and grabbed the demon by the horns, pivoting to avoid its fire spit and turning it to the ground with a smooth Sharasat twist. A warded knife appeared in her hand, slashing the demon's throat. She looked up and the Ikar lust in her eyes matched that of any Sharam Jardir had ever seen. She smiled to the dumbstruck Dalsharam, who had a moment before been rushing to save her. But then her eyes widened and she pointed to the sky.
Look out!
A wind demon dropped from the sky, tearing through the warrior's armor and laying him open with its deadly talons. Everyone reacted at once. A warded knife appeared in Roja's hand, flying to strike the demon at the same time as Wanda's thrown blade and three spears. dropping it before it could take back to the sky. Leisha lifted her skirts and ran to the fallen warrior. The warrior Rastavi had served Jardir loyally for years. His armor was soaked with blood. He struggled madly as Leisha tried to look at his wound.
Hold him down. I can't work with him thrashing about.
Jardir complied, taking Rastavi's shoulders and pinning him firmly.
I am Kredi, deliverer. Bless me, and send me on the Roadmaker Road.
What's he saying?
Leisha cut his thick robe, casting aside the shattered ceramic plates within.
He is telling me his soul is ready for heaven. He asks that I bless him with a quick death.
You'll do no such thing. You tell him his soul may be ready, but his body isn't.
Jardir took Rastavi's face in his hands, meeting his eyes.
You are a spear of the Deliverer. You will walk the lonely road when I command it, and not before. Embrace the pain and be still.
Rastavi's struggles ceased. Leisha looked at the man in surprise, then pushed Jardir aside and set to work.
Asik, have the shield wall continue on. I will wait with the mistress as she attends Rastavi.
To what end? Even if he survives, he will never lift the spear again.
You know that no better than I. It is an Evra. I will not interfere with my betrothed any more than I would a Damating.
The spears of the Deliverer remained behind, forming a circle with Leisha and Rastavi at its center. But there was little need. Rozhar wove a shield of sound around them, and no Alagai dared draw near.
We can move him. I've stopped the bleeding, but he'll need more surgery. And for that, I'll need a proper table and better light.
Will he live to fight another day?
He's alive. Isn't that enough for now?
If he cannot fight, he will likely take his own life later.
Or else he becomes Kafit?
Rastavi has killed hundreds of Alagai. His place in heaven is assured.
Then why would he kill himself?
He is Shurum. He is meant to die on Alagai talons, not old and shriveled in some bed, a burden to his family and tribe. This is why the Damating do not see to the wounded until dawn.
So the ones injured most deeply will be dead?
Yes.
That's inhuman.
It is our way.
And there is the difference between us. Your people live to fight, while mine fight to live. What will you do when you win Sharak Ka and have nothing left to fight for?
Then Allah and heaven will be as one, and all will be paradise.
So why did you not kill that man when he asked you to?
Because you asked that I not. I made the mistake once of ignoring such a plea from one of your people, and it almost cost our friendship.
The one Avan calls the Parchin?
What did the Kafit tell you of him?
Nothing, other than that they were friends and that I reminded him of him. Why?
The Parchin was my friend too, and you are like he was in some ways and different in others. The Parchin had a Sharum's heart.
Meaning?
Meaning he fought for others to live as you do, but for himself, he lived to fight. When his body was broken and the odds without hope, he clawed his way to his feet and fought to his last breath.
He's dead?
Many years since.